Thanks for listening to Tuned to Yesterday's Encore broadcasts. Do you enjoy the historical aspect of these old shows? Would you like to hear more in-depth tales of the performers and players that made the golden age of radio what it was? We have a weekly podcast dedicated to this called the Tuned to Yesterday Dialer, or TTY Dialer for short. It brings you stories of how radio was, along with fun with sound from radio's past, and a brief preview of the shows coming up for the week. The podcasts are about 20 minutes long, and they're posted Saturday nights and make for great listening on Sundays or whenever you want. It's the TTY Dialer podcast at WRVO.org, or listen as part of your subscription to Tuned to Yesterday on iTunes. Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, for this hour of mystery. Later on, we hear Dashiell Hammett's creation, The Fat Man, but right now it's The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in this October 15, 1945 broadcast on Mutual called The Manor House Case.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Well, here's the patio of Dr. Watson's Northern California bungalow, but where's the doctor?
Here I am, Mr. Bartow, out in the garden.
Okay, I'll be right there. Oh, sitting by the fish pond, huh, Doctor?
Yes, my boy. It's rather pleasant out here for a change. Has it ever occurred to you how stupid the expression of a goldfish is, Mr. Bartow?
Well, I can't say I've ever given it much thought, Doctor. Why?
You see this foolish little fellow here with his silly little mouth opening and closing as though he were constantly astonished?
What is this? I thought you were a fish lover.
Yes, I am. But as I was brooding over tonight's story, that goldfish seemed to be making faces at me as though it were trying to remind me of how my face must have looked on a certain June evening in 1890.
Sounds to me as if you're going to tell a story against yourself, Doctor.
I am, young fellow, my lad.
What happened?
One Sunday morning in 1890, I dropped round to visit my friend in Baker Street. Mrs. Hudson told me that he was out, but suggested that I wait in our old rooms for his return and promised me a pot of strong tea, some buttered scones as an inducement. As I walked into the sitting room, I was astonished to see Holmes standing there, a bag in one hand and a coat in the other.
My dear chap, how are you?
I'm fine, Holmes. I'm surprised to see you, though. Mrs. Hudson told me that you were out.
I have been, Watson, on a case. I just returned by my private entrance for some necessary apparatus.
Oh, could I come with you? My wife's away, you know, but my practice is quite slack at the moment.
Not even my trusty old friend Watson can accompany me on this case. It's a ticklish business. The fate of two nations hangs in the balance. I must work alone. Sorry to leave you like this, old fellow. Goodbye.
Oh, wait. Mrs. Hudson's making me some tea and some buttered scones. Can't you wait and share them with me?
Huh? Good old Watson. You're the one fixed point in a changing age. Empires are tottering and you talk of tea and buttered scones.
Oh, I'm sorry you must be awful. Goodbye, old fellow.
Oh, don't look so sad, old fellow. Hmm? The time is ripe. I'll tell you all about the case and you can write it up in your memoirs. Goodbye, old boy.
Buttered scones. I haven't got any appetite for them now.
Did you enjoy the scones, Dr. Watson?
I'm afraid my appetite disappeared when Mr. Holmes left.
It did it? I see you've eaten them all just the same.
Yes, so I did.
I've got a surprise for you, Doctor. Inspector Lestrade is downstairs.
Oh, is he?
He came to see Mr. Holmes, but when I told him he was out, the inspector said he'd like to see you.
Oh, he did? Oh, splendid. I'll ask him to come up, please, will you, Mrs. Hudson?
Aye, sir. Will you come up, please, Inspector?
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Can I butter you up a few more scones,
Doctor? No, thank you. I really couldn't eat them.
I'll just go and make some more the same. You'll eat them if I fix them, Doctor.
No, really, thank you. There you are, Lestrade.
Hello, Dr. Watson. Here's a pretty kettle of fish and no mistake.
Huh? What's the trouble?
Well, I want Mr. Holmes' help on a most important case. Where's he gone?
Well, he's out on a very secret matter.
You know where he is, Doctor?
Well, naturally I know where he is, Lestrade. My old friend never keeps me in the dark. But I'm not at liberty to tell you. Babson, I could help you a bit. After all, I'm not exactly unfamiliar with my friend's methods.
That's true, but just the same. Oh, well, Doctor, two heads are always better than one, even if one is a sheep's head, as my old mother used to say.
Are you suggesting that I'm a sheep's head?
No, I'm not suggesting anything, Doctor. I'm just telling you what my old mother used to say.
I'm really not very interested in what your old mother used to say. Oh. And now, Lestrade, your problem, please.
Well, it's simple enough, Doctor. A German diplomat, Graf Otto von Heldenstein is his name, is in England on a very secret mission.
Graf Otto von Heldenstein? Huh. Yes, I've heard of him. Pray continue.
Well, this von Heldenstein, staying at the manor house at Hampton Wick, not far out of London. Now, this morning, somebody slipped past his guards and threw a bomb into his study. His secretary was killed, and he would have been too, if it hadn't been that he'd left the room a few minutes earlier.
Well, these second-hand investigations are very little use, Lestrade. We must both go down to the manor house at Hampton Wick and examine the situation on the spot.
All right.
Get out the timetable and look up the next train, will you?
Yes. Yeah.
And while you're doing that, I'll go and tell Mrs. Hudson where I'm going.
All right, you are, Doctor.
Doctor, I was just bringing them up to you.
Scones? Well, who can think of scones when an empire is tottering?
Are you sure you're feeling quite well, Doctor?
Of course I am. Now, listen to me, Mrs. Hudson. If Mr. Holmes should return, please tell him that I've gone to Hampton Wick with Inspector Lestrade to investigate the von Heldenstein business.
The von Heldenstein business? Aye, Doctor, I'll tell him that.
Mr. Holmes didn't tell you where he was going, did he?
No, Doctor, he didn't.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Thank
you. Are you sure you don't want the scones, Doctor?
I might as well take him along. I dare say Lestrade could eat him.
Ah, you're the one, Doctor.
Yes, I suppose this is rather exciting. Just the same, I wish I knew what Holmes was doing at this moment.
You are Herr Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, I presume Graf Otto von Heldenstein is expecting me?
Ja, Herr Holmes. He was so anxious that you would come here to the manor house.
I left immediately after I got his summons.
He's very weak. He has lost much blood from the injuries he received this morning.
Injuries that no one knows about, eh?
Nein, Herr Holmes. Mm-hmm. Only I, his old and faithful servant, knows. Follow me, please. I will take you to him.
Franz. Franz, is that you, Franz?
Ja, Herr Graf. And with me is Herr Sherlock Holmes.
Thank heaven you are here, Holmes.
I hope I can be of service to you, sir.
You can. You can be of great service. Sit close to my bed, Holmes. I have not much strength to speak.
I'm listening, Herr Graf.
You must impersonate me.
Yes, so I gathered when I received your message.
I am in England on a most delicate and important mission for the German government. Within a few weeks, your government and mine will conclude a treaty outlining the German and British spheres of interest in Africa.
I see. Obviously, that bomb was thrown this morning by someone who does not wish the treaty to be concluded.
Yeah, exactly, Herr Holmes. That is why you must impersonate me. In 24 hours' time, I shall be well enough to resume my work. In the meanwhile, you can keep the secret of my injuries and also have the opportunity of finding the assassin.
I'm quite prepared to undertake the impersonation, sir, but how can I possibly hope to deceive the members of your personal staff?
With the exception of Franz here and poor Fräulein Ullmeier, who was killed in the explosion that injured me, my staff is new. They have joined me here from the German consulate in London. They will believe that you are me.
Very well, sir. I'll try it.
I have heard of your skill in the art of disguises. And also, it seems to me we are not so unlike each other.
I was about to comment on that fact myself, sir. Yes, I think that a mustache and side whiskers will work wonders, if I can make the accent reasonably convincing.
I will coach you, my friend.
Splendid. Help me off with my coat, will you, Franz? Get me towels and a mirror.
Jawohl, Herr Holmes.
And while I'm applying my makeup, Herr Graf, perhaps you will be so good as to give me the complete circumstances regarding this morning's attempt on your life. If I'm to impersonate you successfully, I must have all the facts at my fingertips.
Wunderbar. It is amazing, Herr Holmes. Even I can hardly tell you from my mask.
Yes, I think it's the wig that puts the finishing touch to my disguise. How did it look to you, Herr Graf?
Mm-hmm. Colossal. I feel as if I were looking into a mirror.
And my accent, you find it reasonably convincing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Extremely so. Try it once again, Herr Holmes.
Yeah, Herr Graf. It gives me the greatest pleasure to do what you ask of me.
Prächtig. Splendid, Herr Holmes. Splendid.
A cab has drawn up at the gate. Two men are getting out. You can see them from the window here.
No, it's the police, possibly, or...
Great Scott! It's Watson and Lestrade.
Friends of yours, Herr Holmes?
One of them is my close colleague, and the other is a detective inspector from Scotland Yard.
Oh, you must keep up the deception. Even with your friends.
As a matter of fact, my friend's investigations will prove an excellent mask for my own search for the assassin. But, well, this is a delicious situation. I hope they won't recognize me.
I am Graf Otto von Heldenstein, gentlemen. You wish to see me?
How do you do, sir? My name is Watson, Dr. Watson, and this is Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard.
How do you do, sir?
Inspector, Dr. Watson, may I ask if I have the great distinction of addressing the Dr. Watson, friend of Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, I'm very flattered that you know me, Herr Graf.
But who does not know the great Dr. Watson? In my country, many people think that you are the real brains of the combination. Tell me, Herr Doctor, is that true?
Well, I wouldn't exactly say that, sir.
Of course, you have both come here to investigate what occurred this morning.
Yes, we have, sir.
Please sit down. If you can find any furniture that is unbroken.
Oh, thank you, sir. I must say the place is in a bit of a mess. And now, Herr Graf, please tell us exactly what happened.
Yeah. I will tell you everything, Herr Doctor. This morning I was working in here with my secretary, poor Fräulein Ulmer. I had occasion to go upstairs to my room to get some necessary papers. As I came down the staircase in to return here, I heard a scream from Fräulein Ulmer. A moment later, there was a most frightful explosion. The concussion stunned me. When I came to, my poor secretary was dead.
Yeah, what people were inside the house at the time of the explosion?
The servants were all at the church. The only people here was my secretary, who was killed. My servant, Franz. I can vouch for him because he was upstairs when I went for my documents. There were three other people in the house, however. Madame Lisa Barona, my hostess and the owner of this house. A young Englishman from the Home Office. His name is Hilary Adams. And the third person in the house was a member of the German embassy, Colonel Schweiger.
Oh, then it's just a matter of cross-questioning the three of them as to their alibis at the time of the explosion. I'll take them one at a time, Lestrade. Ring for that servant fellow. What was his name?
Franz.
Franz, that's
the name. This is a rare privilege to watch a master detective at work.
Yes, Herr Graf, I shouldn't be surprised if my methods teach you quite a bit about the art of detection.
Herr Dr. Watson, this is Colonel Schweiger of the German Embassy.
Where were you, Colonel Schweiger, when the explosion occurred this morning?
I was discussing the military tactics of Clausewitz with one of the guards near the front gates.
Yeah, well, what was the name of the guard, sir?
Carter. Mr. Arthur Carter.
Yeah, I'll check on that.
Thank you, Colonel Schweiger. Please ask Madame Lisa Verona to come in with you.
Questions, nothing but questions. Leave me alone.
Sorry, madam. All I want to know is, where were you when the explosion occurred this morning?
Where was I? In my boudoir, listening to that stupid babblings of the young Englishman, Hilary Adams. Herr Graf, when I offered you my house, I did not know that I would have to put up with the love-making of your staff. everywhere he follows.
No. Please don't get so excited, Madame Verona.
Questions. Stupid young English puppy is making calf eyes at me. My beautiful house blown to pieces, and all you do is...
Mr. Adams, where were you when the explosion occurred?
In Madame Verona's suite.
You swear to that?
Of course I do. You may ask her.
I've already done so, sir. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Thank you. That's all. You may go. Well, Lestrade, did you check on Colonel Schweiger's alibi?
Yes, Doctor. He was telling the truth. He was talking to the Colonel when the explosion happened.
Dear me, Herr Doctor, your examination has not been very successful, has it, sir? Everyone has an alibi.
Yes, but the alibis of Madame Verona and the young Englishman, Hilary Adams, depend on each other's words. They might be lying. And you've been dealing with criminals as long as I have, Herr Graf. You learn to look far deeper than the obvious. Yes, Lestrade and I shall return to London now and make some inquiries. You will hear from me, sir, before the day is over.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm much obliged to you, Doctor, for a very nice meal. Although we've been talking in circles...
Not entirely. Anyway, I have come to one important decision.
Oh, and what's that, Doctor?
Madame Verona is addicted to the use of drugs. The pupils of her eyes were contracted to pinpoints. It's an invariable indication of drug addiction. Lestrade, you go to Scotland Yard and see what you can find out about her, and I'll go back to my house. You can meet me there later. Mary wasn't away, and it's the cook's side out, confound it. I can't see a thing. I'll strike a match. That's better. Hello? Who's that in the drawing room? Who is it?
Watson! I thought you'd never come.
Holmes, where on earth do you spring from?
Never mind that, old chap. I've come to warn you. Keep out of the von Hildenstein business if you value your life.
Well, how did you know that I was working on the case?
I haven't time to tell you now, but I implore you. Keep out of it. There are dangerous forces at work. Forces that would snuff out your life without a thought. Please believe me, old chap. And do as I... Quick, Watson! Under the dining room! Bomb, Watson! Watson, down! It's a bomb!
That was a fine place to break off your story, Doctor, I must say.
Mr. Bartell, I thought I'd keep you in as much suspense as possible.
Well, what happened next? Were you and Holmes injured when that bomb exploded?
No, my boy. The concussion of the explosion knocked me out for a few minutes. When I came to, Holmes had disappeared.
And I can imagine where he'd gone. Go on, Doctor.
Soon after that, Lestrade arrived on the scene, and after a quick and fruitless examination of the premises, we decided to return once more to the manor house. And so, an hour later, I was telling my story to the man I still thought to be the Graf Otto von Hildenstein.
But this is dreadful, Herr Doctor. The bomb might easily have killed you.
Oh, I was ready for it, sir. Quick thinking and presence of mind are my stock in trade, you know. When I heard the glossy crash, I flung myself under the dining room table.
Oh, I'm most distressed that you yourself should be exposed to such danger.
Not at all, Herr Graf. As a matter of fact, I exposed myself deliberately to the attack. It's an old army trick, you know, what we call drawing the enemy's fire.
Calm now, Doctor. You don't mean to tell us that you expected to have that bomb chucked through the window at you?
Of course I did, Lestrade. The assassin knew that I was in working on the case. He followed me to London and fell into my trap, just as I intended him to, by showing his hand.
Well, I don't see what he's got you, Doctor.
I myself must admit I cannot see that you are any nearer to finding the murderer.
On the contrary, sir, the case is nearly solved.
Well, I don't see how you figure that one out, Doctor.
Elementary, my dear Lestrade, elementary. One of the three people under suspicion followed me to my house tonight. The second bomb was thrown at approximately 7 o'clock. Now, it's only a question of finding which one of the three cannot account for his movements at that time Then we shall know the murderer.
You want to cross-examine them again, Doctor?
Yes, Lestrade. Bring them in, please. One at a time. Colonel Schweiger, where were you at 7 o'clock tonight?
Discussing the military tactics of Clausewitz with Mr. Carter of the Home Office Guards.
Great Scott, that's what you were doing at 11 o'clock this morning, too.
It would take many days of discussion for two students to appreciate all the subtleties of Clausewitz.
Yeah, I'll check on that again, Doctor.
Oh, thank you, Lestrade. And please ask Madame Verona to come in, will you?
Questions, questions, and still more questions. Where was I 7 tonight, you asked me? I was listening to more babblings from that stupid young Englishman. Ask him for yourself.
Mr. Adams, where were you at 7 tonight?
With Madame Verona in her boudoir.
There is a curious sameness about the pattern of life in this house, is there not, Herr Doctor?
Well, I checked on Colonel Schweiger's statement. It was true. He was talking to Carter at 7 o'clock, all right. Well, could the other two account for themselves, Doctor?
Well, once again, they alibied for each other, but this time I begin to doubt them.
Oh, why do you say that, Herr Doctor?
Well, I would accept Madame Verona's alibi for young Adams. Obviously, she loathes the boy and wouldn't perjure herself for him. On the other hand, he worships her, and I'm certain that he wouldn't have any scruples about lying to provide an alibi for her.
Well, you've got a point there, Doctor.
Yes, I regard her with great suspicion. Here, come in. Yes, Mr. Adams?
Dr. Watson, I've been worrying about Madame Verona. I was afraid you wouldn't believe my alibi for her.
Indeed?
I have another, an unbiased witness, who can testify that Madame Verona was in this house at 7 tonight. Come in, Franz.
Jawohl, gnädiger Herr.
Franz, did you see Madame Verona at 7 tonight?
Yeah. I take up two glasses of sherry to her. It was a few minutes before 7.
Thank you, Franz. Thank you, Mr. Adams. I appreciate your concern. You may go.
Yeah. Seems to me we're still traveling in circles, Doctor.
On the contrary, my dear Lestrade, the case is solved.
Indeed. You astonish me, Herr Doctor. Who is the guilty party?
You'll know in a minute, sir. Lestrade, bring the three suspects in here, please.
Aye, sir.
When they are assembled, I will give you the solution to the mystery. Ladies and gentlemen, the mystery is solved, and I must apologize for any little inconvenience that you've undergone. You, Madame Verona, you, Colonel Schweiger, and you, Mr. Adams, have all unshakable alibis. Therefore, the solution's obvious. As my dear friend Sherlock Holmes has often said, eliminate the impossible, and whatever remains, no matter how improbable, is the truth. Therefore, the only person that could have thrown both bombs is you or yourself, Graf Otto von Heldenstein.
George, I believe you're right, Doctor.
What have you got to say for yourself, sir?
That I too, Herr Doctor, have an unshakable alibi.
Oh, what is it?
I was with you, Herr Doctor, when the second bomb was thrown
tonight. What on earth are you talking about? I was alone, sir.
Oh, come now, old fellow, that's not true.
Holmes.
What?
Holmes, how could you?
Mr. Holmes. Well, strike me.
Don't be angry with me, old chap.
Well, you made a complete fool of me,
Holmes. No, not at all, my dear fellow.
I suppose
you got the real solution to the case, as usual, Mr. Adams.
Yes, Lestrade, I have.
Well, let's hear it, then. Might as well show me up to the
acid. Oh, my dear Watson, stop berating yourself. You really handled the case very well. You made only one mistake.
Huh?
May I revise that dictum of mine which you just quoted? Eliminate the possible, and then if nothing remains, some part of the impossible must be possible.
Which part?
Colonel Schweiger's alibi was valid. So was Madame Verona's, since it was corroborated by the trusty Franz. But what does your alibi rest on, Mr. Adams?
Madame Verona's told you I was here at 7.
Yes, but Madame Verona is addicted to the use of drugs. I'm sure that you spotted that fact, Watson.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I did.
Your mistake, old chap, was in not drawing the correct conclusion. Mr. Adams' alibi depends on the unsupported word of a drug addict. Now, the use of drugs notoriously destroys, first of all, the sense of time. Any trick such as the resetting of clocks could be worked on her without her noticing. Her word on a time alibi is completely valueless.
Then Adams is the man.
Fools, meddlers. Why don't you?
He's a murderer and a traitor.
Well,
Well, now that we're back in Baker Street, Watson, I may as well tell you that I had my suspicions of Adams from the first.
You did? Why?
Well, my brother Mycroft had told me that he was suspected of being a traitor at heart. He's been under observation for some years. He was purposely given this assignment as a definite test of his integrity.
Well, I understand it all now, Holmes. It's the same. I did make an ass of myself in front of Lestrade,
too. Oh, don't worry about it, old chap. Please don't worry. You always can correct that impression, you know. Yours will be the last word.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, when you come to write this story in your memoirs, my dear fellow, you can always do a little, re-editing of your own part. Posterity never need know.
Doctor, that was really a swell story.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Sort of made me out of a bit of a fool, huh?
Oh, nothing of the kind, Doctor. I agree with Holmes. You did a splendid job.
Oh, you really think
I did? After all, you did line up his suspects for him, didn't you?
Well, come to think of it, yes, of course I did.
And you did make the point that Madame Verona was a drug addict.
Yes, by Jove, so I did.
And you did say that Mr. Adams' alibi could be a lie.
By Jove, you're right. I did solve that case for Holmes, after all. Mr. Bartell, did anyone ever tell you that you're really a very smart young man? I wish you and I could work on a case together.
We can, starting tonight.
No. Really?
Sure. In celebration of National Wine Week, I brought you a case of Petri wine. And I suggest we start on it right now with a glass of port.
What a fellow.
What a wine. Petri wine. We know that's really good because the Petri family has been making fine wine since the 1800s. For generations. And before we say goodnight to our friends, I want to remind them that our men overseas need the Merchant Marine to bring them back home. The Merchant Marine got him there, and it'll bring him back if you help. Right now, the Merchant Marine needs experienced mates, engineers, ABs, firemen, oiler, water tenders, and chief cooks. If you qualify, write or wire collect at once to Merchant Marine, Washington 25, D.C. Bring the boys home. Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Greek Interpreter. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week. Same time, same station. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode from October 15th, 1945, The Manor House Case, based on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's work, The Greek Interpreter. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now on to Dashiell Hammett's Fat Man. Though he didn't have much to do with the series, apart from lending the name of the character, a great broadcast next from one of the 11 shows that have survived the test of time and the 1960s fire at the ABC Radio Warehouse. From July 22, 1949, this episode called Murder is the Medium with J. Scott Smart.
There he goes, into that drugstore. He's stepping on the scale. Weight. 239 pounds. Fortune, danger. Who is it?
The Fat Man. To most people, a zoo is a collection of four-footed animals. But there's one menagerie I know of where the inmates walk on 2 feet. In the first cage, for instance, you'll find the giant forger, whose specialty is writing other people's names. And in another iron cell, you can inspect the genus pickpocket, known also as the little dip, who can sometimes prove that the hand is quicker than the eye. But the prize exhibit is a hopped-up character with a nervous twitch in his forefinger. He prowls alone when he looks for prey, and he's known for his taste for murder. That's the Fat Man, a fast-moving criminologist who tips the scales at 239 pounds. Brought to you by the Norwich Pharmacal Company Limited. The Reynards, Oscar and Harriet, were a typical suburban pair, except that Oscar was 6 or 8 years younger than his over-upholstered spouse. He was a neat little guy in a seersucker suit, while Mrs. Reynard looked like the vice president in charge of production for the Hillsdale Sewing Circle.
I'm Mrs. Harriet Reynard, Mr. Runyon, and this is my husband, Oscar. My second husband, that is. My first husband, Melvin, was supposed to have died 2 years ago.
Isn't it official yet?
Of course, Mr. Runyon, but Harriet has the notion...
Oscar, you promised to let me tell it to Mr. Runyon in my own way.
I'm sorry, my dear.
What's the story, Mrs. Reynard?
About 4 weeks ago, Oscar and I happened to wander into a rug shop on the Lower West Side. After we looked at the owner's wares, he invited us into a back room to meet his wife.
An attractive woman, Mr. Runyon, with an interesting face.
We were told that she had occult powers and could bring the dead back to life. Then he asked us if we wanted to attend a manifestation.
You mean a seance?
He didn't call it a seance, but I suppose that's what it was. At any rate, we returned that evening, just out of curiosity, and I spoke to my dear departed husband.
Now, Harriet.
It's true, Oscar, you were there. It was Melvin's voice, and I saw his face light up in the dark, right in front of me.
I'll admit she's right, Mr. Runyon.
Oscar thought it was some kind of a trick, and asked me not to go there again. But I couldn't resist, and I went by myself without his knowledge. I saw Melvin again. He seemed to be sitting in an office, dictating a letter to a stenographer.
How was business?
What?
Skip it. Go on, Mrs. Renner.
Well, on this second visit, I received a message from Melvin, asking for a little money to tide him over. I couldn't refuse, Mr. Runyon, and live with my conscience. After all, it was Melvin's money I inherited. And besides...
How much did he ask you for?
$500. Can you imagine that? And Harriet was fool enough to give it to them.
Oscar. It wasn't much, Mr. Runyon, and neither was the $1,500 he asked for later. But now, I'm beginning to think I may have made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I went there on Wednesday night, I was told that Melvin was bankrupt, and he needed $20,000 in a hurry. That was when I decided I ought to have some outside advice.
You still think you spoke to your first husband?
I wouldn't have accepted Melvin's voice alone as final proof, but I saw him, Mr. Runyon. Right in front of me, and I wouldn't mistake the face of a man I'd been married to for 15 years.
When's your next rendezvous with Melvin, Mrs. Reynard?
Today at 6.
Is that when you're supposed to shell out for the 20 grand?
I was told to bring it all in cash.
Have you made the withdrawal?
Not yet, but I have $500 in my bag.
Mm-hmm. Let's have that.
In advance? Isn't that unusual, Mr. Runyon?
Keep your shirt on. I'm not in that much of a hurry for a fee.
Here you are. $500 bills.
Good. Now, just a minute there.
What are you doing, Mr. Runyon?
Marking these bills. All right, Mrs. Reynard. Put them back in your bag and hand them to the medium when you see her. Then leave the rest to me.
Just what do you intend to do?
Communicate with the spirit world, Oscar, and get a receipt from Melvin for Mrs. Reynard's dough. The rug shop was a murky little joint that reminded me of an Asiatic bazaar. The walls were covered with oriental rugs, and I could smell the pungent odor of strong, aromatic coffee someone was brewing in the rear. The proprietor was a thin little man whose accent I couldn't quite place, but I knew it wasn't far from the Persian Gulf. His manners were impeccable, and his smile was full of teeth. While he clasped his skinny hands in a gesture of greeting.
It is my wish to serve you, sir.
Oh, are you the owner?
Mr. Poussin, at your command.
Well, I'm shopping for rugs.
Ah, we make a specialty here, sir, of rugs. You are perhaps familiar with Oriental rugs?
In a sketchy way.
Then permit me to make a few suggestions in my humble manner. The finest rugs, as you might know, come from Persia. And this is a perfect example. Feel its texture, sir.
Mmm. It's like a kitten.
It is a kashan. A notable weave. Observe the striking red foundation with its floral designs and exquisite lines.
Yeah, it reminds me a little of an Isfahan.
Oh, an Isfahan. Then you do know something about weaving. The Isfahan is a rare treasure indeed. Creations of genius from the 16th century. But only a few choice specimens are now in existence. And they're worth a king's ransom.
Yeah, you've got quite a display here for some.
The very best.
Must take quite a bit of lettuce to make a collection like this. Looks to me like it's worth a lot of dough.
Oh, they are here on consignment only, my friend. And all I receive is a commission for the sale. But you do not appear very interested.
Oh, why don't you let me browse around for an hour or so? I like to take my time.
I would be most happy to permit it, sir. But unfortunately, I must close the shop at 6. My wife is conducting a manifestation at that time.
Oh, your wife is a medium?
Well, she does not call herself a medium, but she communicates with the spirit world.
Well, that sounds interesting. Any chance of getting in?
Is there some dear departed loved one you wish to contact?
Oh, dozens of them.
Huisan!
Oh, Angela, my dear. My assistant, sir.
How do you do?
Your wife wants to see you.
Oh, thank you, Angela. Excuse me for one moment, sir.
Charlene.
Who are you?
My name is Runyon.
What are you doing here?
Shopping.
You're not looking for rugs. You're looking for trouble.
Well, buy that, too, if necessary.
Is this a raid?
Not exactly.
There's no law against conducting a meeting in this state.
But there's a law against fraud, sweetheart, and it's still in the books.
Pardon me, sir.
Yeah?
My wife has requested that you join us inside. Show the gentleman in, Angela.
You'd better get out of here while the going's good.
And miss a chance of communicating with the dead?
Suit yourself. But look out you don't end up on their side.
She led me to a room in the back that was windowless and smelled as stuffy as a tomb. There were a number of folding chairs lined up against the wall, the kind they use in funeral parlors. And behind a bare desk, her face as rigid as a mask, sat an oriental-looking woman. We were joined by Oscar Reinhardt and his wife about 5 minutes later, but we gave no sign of recognition. And as Huisan shuffled to the center of the room, I could feel the tension mounting like the approach of an electrical storm.
The lights, Angela. Put it out, please. Now we are ready to begin. We are waiting, Sala.
We are gathered here together this night, again to make contact with our friends in other worlds. Is there anyone here who wishes to talk to one of the departed?
I do.
Identify yourself, please.
Harriet Bernard.
And who do you wish to see?
Melvin Bishop, my late husband.
Melvin. Melvin Bishop. Do you hear me? Return to Earth and make your presence known. Melvin.
The contact is difficult, Sala.
Very difficult.
But you promised me he'd come.
I am sorry, Mrs. Reynard, but it's quite impossible.
Ah, Melvin! It's Melvin! There he is, Mr. Runyon, above her head.
Ah! Put out that light!
It happened so fast, I didn't have a chance to make a move. The face of a man of 60 appeared behind the medium, hazily at first, then much clearer, like solidifying smoke. The next thing I knew, someone brushed past me quickly, and I heard the door open and close as I groped for the light. But Oscar beat me to it. And when the light went on, I saw him standing near the switch, while his wife had passed out completely in her chair.
Harriet, she's fainted.
She'll be all right. Looks as though the rest of the party decided to call it a day.
I saw it. It was Melvin. Now you know that I was right.
I'll show you what you saw, Mrs. Reinhardt. Over to this wall.
What is it, Mr. Runyon?
Look.
Why? There's a hole in the wall.
Covered over with transparent paper.
And there's a camera inside the hole, worked by remote control. A roll of movie film and a little ingenuity goes a long way as far as Tucker's are concerned. And as for his voice, Well, it looks as though something new has been added. Move away from that desk, Oscar.
It's a medium, Mr. Wayne. It's Darla, on the floor behind the desk.
With a 10-inch stiletto stuck in her back. The police sent out a citywide alarm for Puissant and his girlfriend. But 3 days went by with practically no results. Then I got myself a bright idea. I put an ad in all the papers that must have read like a winning lottery number to a rug dealer. And because I offered to sell a genuine Isfahan for exactly $100. I listed my phone, address, and my apartment number, but I didn't include my name. And for a day or so, I was flooded with fancy offers. I just about figured that Puissant was wise to the gag when I got another call. And as I put on my best international accent, I recognized Puissant's dulcet tones at the other end of the wire. Yes?
I am calling in regard to an advertisement in the papers.
Oh, the rug.
You say it is an Isfahan?
Oh, the genuine article.
And why do you wish to sell it so cheaply?
I am selling a rug, my friend, but not a history of how I obtained it.
I see.
Do you wish to inspect it?
If you please.
My address was included in the advertisement.
Will you be home within the hour?
I shall be most delighted.
And I shall be most pleased to visit your house.
Mr. Runyon.
Hello, Puissant. Come in. Come in and make yourself at home.
But the name downstairs in the mailbox, it was Curtis.
Don't tell anybody, but he's the guy who sells me my towels.
Was a trick.
And a pretty obvious one. I didn't think you were dumb enough to fall. Now, just raise your hands above your shoulders, sweetheart, like a good little man.
But I have no weapons, if that's what you are looking for.
No extra stilettos to spare?
You think I killed Sala?
Oh, no, of course you didn't. She died of a heavy cold.
But I didn't even know what had happened in that room. Until I read it in the papers, Mr. Runyon. I swear that is the truth.
Then what was your hurry to scram out? And don't tell me you had a date with your dentist.
I was pulled out.
By one of Sala's ghosts?
By Angela.
Incidentally, where is she?
Angela?
Now, don't stall, Puissant. I'm way ahead of you.
I don't know where she has gone.
That sounds very convincing. Okay, try this one. How did you get a hold of that film of Melvin Bishop?
What film?
Oh, brother. Now we're really getting cagey.
I know nothing about a film.
Or a camera. And how about those old dictaphone records you used? Don't tell me Melvin made them after he was buried.
Oh, you are trying to confuse me. I don't know what you mean, Mr. Runyon.
Okay, I'll explain it to you in a different way. Up to now, all you faced was a fraud rap. You might have gotten a year or two in the clink, or even a suspended sentence for a first offense. But homicide is a different story.
But I didn't murder her, Mr. Runyon. Well, what shall I do? Tell me how to save myself. I'm an innocent man.
Where's Angela, Puissant?
If I tell you where to find her, will I go free?
Well, that all depends. But if you don't give me a lead, you haven't got a chance.
Very well, Mr. Runyon. I will take you to Angela.
We got into my car and drove downtown to a section near Greenwich Village, then parked near one of those gypsy hangouts converted from an empty store. A phrenologist's skull was pictured in the window along with a giant human hand. And inside at a small table with a bottle of hooch in front of her was Angela.
Puissant?
I see you double in brass, baby. How's the palm reading business?
What do you want?
I'd like to have my fortune told.
Angela?
Shut up! So this is what I get for being loyal to you. You double-crossing little stool pigeon.
But he said it was murder, Angela. And he told me they'd give me the electric chair.
I hope they do. I hope you sit there, Puissant, and froth.
Maybe you'll be sitting on his lap, sweetheart.
You've got nothing on me.
I didn't kill Sallow. Why should I?
Because you hated her.
Why, you lying woman!
Temper.
How many times did you make a play for me behind her back?
This is not true, Mr. Runyon.
Not much it isn't, you hypocritical little fake.
No, I treated Angela as a daughter. And as far as my wife was concerned, I never knew until the other night that she was a fraud.
You mean you attended those phony sessions and played it straight?
I believed my wife had occult powers because I am a superstitious man. Whatever was done without my knowledge.
This jerk was so dumb, his own wife didn't trust him. And I felt sorry for him. Like a dope, I tried to save his rotten hide. But from now on, he's on his own. He can worm his way out of this one all by himself.
You've got a little worming of your own to finish, sweetheart.
Don't threaten me. You've got nothing on me but a misdemeanor.
You don't say.
All right, so I did figure out the moving picture stunt. So what? It was Sallow who collected the dough. And it was Sallow who also held out on me for my share. But I fixed her wagon.
With a 10-inch knife.
I didn't touch her. All I did was work the movie camera when she didn't expect it. I knew you were a private dick, and so did she. We were supposed to let this act go flat that night, so you couldn't get any evidence. Too bad that room was dark. I would have loved to see her face when I flashed that picture on the wall.
Where'd you get a hold of it?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Believe me, sweetheart, I'm gonna know.
You can take me into custody. And you can question me from now until the cows come home. You won't be able to hold me for murder, and you know it.
How much are you getting paid to keep your mouth shut?
Plenty. A lot more than you can afford to pay to open it up. And there's no question about my getting the moolah this time, handsome. Because this time, I'm on the receiving end alone. Here's luck, you oversized flatfoot. All good for me, and all bad for you.
Runyon, what has happened to her?
She's dead, Poussin.
Dead?
That bottle of booze must be loaded with poisoned dynamite. She said she was on the receiving end, and she wasn't kidding. I put in a call to headquarters and left Poussin with the body. Then I hopped into my car and started for Mrs. Reynard's suburban home. I didn't bother with the doorbell, but entered through the service entrance in the basement and found my way upstairs to the first floor. The house was dark, which suited me fine, and I used a pocket flash to browse around. But 10 minutes later, as I was going to a study desk, I suddenly found out the place wasn't as empty as I thought it was. Oh, good evening.
What are you doing in my house, Mr. Runyon?
Didn't the butler announce me, Oscar?
I can't believe it. Can it be possible that you're nothing but a common thief?
No, stop. Where's your wife?
She's ill in bed. I was turning in myself when I heard a noise down here, so I found my gun and decided to investigate.
Oh, relax, Oscar, and put the gun away. You know I didn't come here to steal the silverware.
Well, why did you come?
I was looking for some film.
Film?
Movie film. Was the late Melvin Bishop an amateur motion picture fan?
That's something I couldn't tell you.
Well, then maybe Mrs. Reynard can.
I told you she was ill.
Huh? What's the matter with her?
The shock of the medium's murder was a little too much.
Well, she can spare me a couple of minutes. Some will be long.
You insist on seeing her?
Yeah, if it's all right with you.
Very well, Mr. Runyon.
Oscar.
Yes?
Don't you think we'd both be a little more comfortable without that gun in your hand?
I'm perfectly relaxed.
There's someone notice.
My wife is on the floor above. We'll use those stairs. You can proceed to her room, Mr. Runyon, and I will follow right behind.
We slowly climbed the staircase to the upper floor, and Oscar nudged me into the room with the barrel of his gun. His wife was in bed, propped up on a couple of pillows, and I noticed a glass of milk on a table right next to her. She looked a little startled when her husband and I walked in, particularly when she saw the gun in Oscar's hand and the unusual expression on his ordinarily timid face. Sorry to disturb you, Mrs. Reynard.
I found Mr. Runyon in the study downstairs prowling through the house.
Oh, I don't understand.
Well, you will in just a minute.
Mr. Runyon would like to ask you a question, Harriet.
Oh, it's already answered. That moving picture film the medium used belonged to Melvin Bishop, and it came from here. I found more just like it in the study desk.
But how did they get hold of it?
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out. It could have been stolen by Angela, for instance. But that theory was eliminated when Angela was.
Eliminated?
The girl is dead, Mrs. Raynard. She had a visitor a few minutes before I spoke to her. He brought a bottle of poisoned whiskey and a proposition to keep her mouth shut. She accepted both and crossed herself off my list.
But that's incredible.
Your husband made a bargain with Sala, the medium, to fleece you a little dough. He gave her the film and a couple of Melvin's old dictaphone discs. When Melvin asked you for the money, the voice was dubbed in. But it wasn't hard to do with a perfect model on a record.
The man is mad, Harriet. Absolutely mad.
On the night I went to Poisson's, Oscar got in touch with Sala. He told her a private detective was on his way and had to play it down. She was going to do just what he asked her to when Angela decided to throw a monkey wrench in the works. Oscar thought Sala was crossing him, so he knocked her off.
Don't you think you might...
But it's as good as in the bag. You're the only logical nominee who happens to be left, Oscar. You settled that when you settled with Angela.
Yes, I settled with her the way I intend to settle with you, Mr. Runyon.
Only I'm not blackmailing you, Oscar. I'm putting you in the chair. You ought to stick to poison, Oscar.
Oh, you killed him.
And the only thing that would kill this guy would be a dose of DDT. Do you mind if I borrow that glass of milk, Mrs. Raynard? I imagine Oscar prepared it for you with his own little hands.
Oh.
Come on, come out of it, sweetheart.
Oh.
Papa's got a little drink. Here, would you like to wet your whistle?
No, take it away, for heaven's sake. Don't put that glass near my mouth.
It's funny, I had a hunch about that one.
What's in that glass, Mr. Runyon?
A slight dose of poison, Mrs. Raynard.
Poison?
Probably enough to kill a horse. Someone must have given your husband a chemistry set for Christmas. All right, Oscar, up on your feet.
All right, all right.
The next time you attend a seance, you'll be sitting in the important chair. And when they pull that switch, mister, you'll contact Melvin Bishop in person.
Next week, the Norwich Pharmacal Company presents that fascinating and exciting character, the Fat Man, in the adventure called Murder Rides the Breakers.
The Fat Man on Tuned to Yesterday from ABC, heard on July 22nd, 1949. And with both cases closed, that's it for this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Lavinia. It's been a pleasure.